One night when the moon was so mellow, Rosita met young Manuelo. He held her like this, this lovely miss, then stole a kiss, this fellow. He said he was glad he met her, and soon he would come and get her. But she said, no, no, I cannot go until I know you better. Tippy-tippy-tin, tippy-tin, tippy-tippy-town, tippy-town. He kept on the stealing, and he had a feeling she was satisfied. Tippy-tippy-tin, tippy-tin, tippy-tippy-town, tippy-town. She was saying, go, sir, so he held her, that's how he complied. One night when the moon was so mellow, Rosita met young Manuelo. He held her, da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da-da. Re-da-da-da, da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da-da. He said he was glad that he had met her, and soon he would come and he'd get her. But she said, no, no, I cannot go until I know you better.
PCJ Radio International presents the longest running international show, The Happy Station Show, produced and presented by Keith Pehon.
Tippy-tin, tippy-tin-tin, tippy-tan, tippy-tan-tan, tippy-tan, tippy-tan-tan, do-do-da-da-da-ma-do-da-da-ma-ma-do. Tippy-tin, tippy-tin-tin, tippy-tan, tippy-tan-tan, do-do-do-do-do-do, do-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. It's plain to see
well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome again to another edition of your program, Happy Station, from PCJ Radio International. Today, well, for this being the last Sunday of February, we're going to be presenting to you our second anniversary show for 2018, because this year marks the 90th anniversary of the program. And to do so, the theme this time around are the interviews. Yeah, the interviews of very well-known personalities who happen to venture in front of the microphone for the program during the history of it with Tom Meyer. Now, there were too many interviews, of course, that we can actually go into, and 1 hour isn't exactly enough time. Instead, I decided to choose three. Three of my favorite, by three very well-known people. We're going to begin with the first one. Now, I'm not going to tell you who it is, because I think that just by the piece of music itself, you will find out right away.
Thank you. in somebody's office. I don't know whose, but it doesn't really matter. There are a lot of racing cars here. I can talk to Henry Mancini now. And that's the door opening with lovely Christine coming in. Our listeners all know you, lovely Christine, bringing in a little drink.
Yes.
Mr. Mancini, welcome to Happy Station.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
My listeners, even if I hadn't talked about you so much and announced compositions and records and what else, would know your name anyway, because I don't think you need our show to be known all over the world. People mostly know you as a name which appears on albums, if they are not in the broadcasting or music mm-hmm. business in some way. But you are not only one thing. You're everything which you can probably be in the music field, I think.
Well, I started as an arranger, you know, for bands. Mm-hmm. My first really important job was with the Tex Beneke Glenn Miller Orchestra right after the war. And then I always wanted to write film music ever since I was a little kid. That was my ambition, and I gravitated to Los Angeles through the medium of marriage. My wife lived there. She sang. Her name was Ginny O'Connor. She mm-hmm. sang with the... Yeah. Oh, you know those things.
Oh, I want to talk about that later on.
But well, now. Well, I can see I have to start thinking here. This man knows. And so I've always wanted film music as my career, and I've pursued that. And the records and the concerts, the conducting has all been a residual benefit
yeah.
from that.
Now, people who know nothing about writing film scores, like myself, I hope will ask the same question as I want to know the answer to. Now, if you are going to write the music to a film, the film isn't ready yet, is it? Usually.
Well, no. I wait. I prefer to wait till it is ready, till it is completely finished. And you, in other words, I want to see it just like you would see it in a theater, except without music.
Right.
Because it's a very precise job, craft that we do, and if you cut 10 feet of film out of a sequence and there's music in it, you have to cut the music too. So,
right.
So we wait until we can, what we call a fine cut, mm-hmm. which means the final version, and then we write. There might be cuts later, but at least you don't have to cut a lot.
Right. And has this been the case with all the big films you wrote music
for?
That's
the way it is. This is always the way. This is the way you work.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So actually the music is the last thing which is added to the film.
Yeah, it usually is, and usually as being the last thing, the time element is involved, and you don't get an awful lot of time to do it. Usually the average score from the time I see a film until I record is about 4 weeks.
Is that all?
Yeah.
Doesn't seem like very much to me, but then again, I'm not...
Well, it's enough for me, but yeah. But it is, and sometimes less, depending on the circumstances.
Yeah. Does it happen often that you want to see a certain sequence over and over again before you have an idea of what the music is going to be like?
Well, I look at the whole picture. Immediately, right now, while I'm here in London, I'm looking at the Return of the Pink Panther. I'm going to do that. So I've seen it every day, and I will see it like twice tomorrow. And I look at that picture until it just passes my eyes and it's absorbed, you know. And in that way, I find what I want to do and what kind of music I want. Now, after I leave, now I'm going back to the United States, and I'll write it there,
mm-hmm.
and then I'll return to record it in the middle of November.
So actually, you'll write the music without having a copy of the film handy to look at it again.
Yes. Well, some writers, some composers, have a print of the film. You know, they get a print of it, and they have what they call a moviola.
Yeah,
and a moviola is nothing. Is something that they use in the studios. It's a small machine that has a foot pedal, and you press the pedal, and you put the reels of film up on top, and it's a viewing screen, so you can run it backwards and forwards.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. It's, but I don't like that. I don't work that way. Not that that way is bad, but I just don't work
it's
that way.
It's not your way.
Yeah. And so I just absorb myself in the film. And by the time I've seen it about 7 or 8 times, then I don't see it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Then I have my assistant, who is called a music editor, make up the sheets or make up the... we decide with the director where the music is going to be.
Yeah.
And then the music editor will give me detailed accounts of each scene that involves music.
Uh-huh. So,
and then we go from that.
I see.
Baby Elephant Wonk, composed by Henry Mancini, who is speaking there with Tom Meyer. Of all the interviews that I was going through for today's program, the one that really stuck out is actually one of my favorites, because it's a singer who's still with us today, and she's a dame. Yes, she's a dame. One of her well-known songs from her career was the signature tune to Goldfinger. Yes, I'm speaking about the incomparable Shirley Bassey. This interview between Tom Meyer and Shirley Bassey was recorded in 1975.
Kiss me, honey, honey, kiss me. Throw me, honey, honey, throw me. Don't care even if I blow my top, but honey, honey, don't stop. I'd like to play a little game with you, a little game especially made for two. If you come closer, I will show you how. Closer, closer now. Kiss me, honey, honey, kiss me. Throw me, honey, honey, throw me. Don't care even if I blow my top, but honey, honey, don't stop. We've never played this little game before. If you relax, then you'll enjoy it more. Just settle down and let me teach you how. Closer, closer now. Kiss me, honey, honey, kiss me. Thrill me, honey, honey, thrill me. Don't care even if I blow my top, but honey, honey, don't stop. You kiss so well, my lips begin to burn, and I can tell I've got a lot to learn. So hold me close and darling, show me how. Closer, closer now. Kiss me, honey, honey, kiss me. Thrill me, honey, honey, thrill me. Don't care even if I blow my top, but honey, honey, don't stop.
Well, and of course, in a profession like yours and in life the way I suppose you lead it, you meet so many people for such a short time.
Exactly, and most of them are bores anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know. And you have to put up with them because they're part
yes.
of what's going on at that moment.
Yeah, that's true. There's nobody to answer the door.
Just put the tape on. You know, because I don't like this sort of question-answer bit.
No.
You know, I believe in just... Since you don't have enough opportunity to really get to know each other well and have a, you know, a conversation you would have otherwise,
yeah.
I just believe in chatting and then seeing what you can use, and if it's no good, then just letting it go altogether. Do you have a feeling yourself that your life has become sort of one huge row of hotel rooms, interviews, and stages?
Oh, of course. That has been my life for the last 18 years, which is... the best, you know, most of my life,
mm-hmm.
let's put it that way, because I started very young in show business.
Yeah.
And so actually my life has been show business.
Now I ask it because, as I said before, you've picked the right time of the year but the wrong weather. But I suppose even if it had been beautiful weather, you wouldn't have much opportunity to see anything.
It wouldn't make any difference to me.
No.
You see, weather, it does, unless, of course, I go to somewhere like Sydney in Australia, and then the weather... means a great deal because Sydney happens to be an incredibly beautiful place, but only if the sun is shining,
right, right.
You know,
mm-hmm.
Because it's you know, there's nothing but sea and beaches, etc.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Oh, wonderful! Something we could do with.
You know, cities are very sad. I think when the weather is dull, like London is terribly miserable when it's dull.
No,
all big cities, you know.
But
as you say, I don't get a chance.
Well,
I'm not a tourist anyway. I don't have the time, and B, you know, I'm not really interested in traipsing around.
No.
I would rather use that opportunity to rest up, you know, for the
yeah.
next. Yeah. Big onslaught, you
yeah.
know. I sound like a cattle herder, you know.
Next great big cattle drive.
Yeah, the cattle drive, yeah. And I become a tourist when I'm on vacation, though.
Mm.
You know, if I go somewhere on vacation, especially to that place to see it, then I become a tourist, you know. Take my little camera.
And then are you interested in historical things, or do you just want to be away from everybody who could possibly recognize
yes,
you?
Yes, yes. Oh, of course.
Relax
oh,
on the beach.
The last thing I want is anybody to recognize me,
mm-hmm.
you know?
It's her, it's her.
It's frightening, you know. Usually Bassi says, no, I'm not, I wish I was. But I say things like, I'm not as beautiful as her, you know.
That's great.
I don't have a voice like her. Wish I had her money or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She's like, Chris Swan, you.
And right. that really puts them off, of
and
course.
And yes, and it puts them right off, you know. And, but the incredible thing is, it doesn't matter how much I disguise myself, I can go out with a scarf and the huge, thick, dark glasses, and, but I forget because I've always got a mink coat on or a sable coat, you see. And so therefore, I mean, and then I can't understand how they recognize me, you know.
You should find somebody to put the coat on and then go out yourself. Had you been here before? Yes.
Wow.
Or not?
To Amsterdam?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, for one day when I was in Hilversum.
Yeah.
I was doing a television show in Hilversum.
Yeah.
And I had a day free, so we drove into Amsterdam.
Mm-hmm.
We had a look around and went to an old pub in the square, somewhere near the square.
Oh, wait a minute.
Like English pub.
Yeah.
And then just up a few doors, there was a restaurant on the corner. Oh, what's it called? Like a French name. And we had this fantastic...
a little old restaurant, too?
Yes, it was old, but it had all windows, you know.
Not the Black Sheep.
No, not the Black Sheep, mm-hmm. No.
Oh, well.
Anyway, we had fantastic sausage and mash. And, mm-hmm. You know. Then we went to see an English film. A French-English.
Uh-huh.
Waterloo was English.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With Napoleon and Nelson.
Yeah.
And we had a lovely day, and we walked up the street where there's
good.
Traffic allowed, you know.
Yeah.
We had a super day anyway. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed that. But this was my first time that I'd actually been in Amsterdam or stayed in the hotel in Amsterdam.
Yeah.
I think it's a beautiful city from what I've seen of it.
Yeah. You know. And again, you're only here for 2 days, right?
Exactly. We arrived yesterday, mm-hmm. you know, and they had interviews. And then by the time the interviews were over, it was too late. You know, it wasn't the exact time to go out on the canals. I would love to have gone
on one
of the barges. And that I would have loved to have done.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And especially when the weather is nice at night, when all the things are lit up. Of course, you don't see as much. I always tell the people, take one trip during the daytime
and another one at night
because it's incredible. It's incredible.
Like, for instance, I've been to Paris quite a few times. I've never been on the Seine. And, you know, they have that the boat, you know, where you can go and have dinner and it as it's moving down the Seine, which sounds terribly romantic to me.
And you never had the time to do it.
I've never had the time to do it.
Well, that's it. That's what I meant. Yeah. Becomes sort of today's Wednesday, it must be Amsterdam.
if it's Tuesday, it must be Belgium.
Right, that's the thing.
Yeah, we saw that film too. I'm a great film goer. Oh, yes, tremendous. I love it. I'm a frustrated actress, I think that's right. But nobody's offered me a part. Actually, I've been offered many parts, but either they were bad or I don't know, the last minute they changed their mind and decided to get a name or something like that, you know. For instance, the last film that was offered to me, which was the best film that had ever been offered, was Man of La Mancha.
And
I was so excited about it. And of course I went and told everybody, which I normally don't, because I learned in the past not to, you know, hatch one's eggs,
and all that.
not to count one's chickens until they're hatched. Yes. So, anyway, I did shoot off my big mouth and I told everybody about it, the press.
Well, it never happened.
And
the
of course,
press too.
Yes, of course. And then, of course, it appeared in the paper that Sophia Loren had gotten the part. And then, of course, naturally, the phone didn't stop ringing. The press was saying, what do you think about that, you know? So I said, well, if I had to lose out to anybody, I couldn't think of a better person to lose out to than Sophia Loren, because she's very beautiful. Not only is she beautiful, she's a very good actress. I said, but she can't sing. So obviously, I don't know if she heard about it, because then the next thing was that I read in the paper that she had decided to sing. So this I've got to see, because it's a very exacting role, because I mean the first girl to do that was a mezzo-soprano, and that was Joan Denyer.
Yeah, I know. She did the part in the States.
And that calls for a voice. But Sophia thinks that she's Neapolitan, because she's Neapolitan, that soul is enough. She says you don't have to have
a
vocal cords.
But that's
not
the way it was
for
written.
It wasn't written for soul. It was written for somebody with a pair of lungs and vocal cords.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see how it was finished some time ago.
Yes, it's finished.
It hasn't been here yet. But knowing this story,
it's not ready for release, I don't think, yet, for a while.
Mm-mm.
So I think maybe they still have some interior things to do, or maybe...
Maybe they'll ask you back to dub the song.
That would be another smack in the face, wouldn't it?
Climb every search high and low, follow every byway, every path you know, climb every mountain, ford every stream, follow
understand these things anyway. For instance, with My Fair Lady, when it says, even on the covers of the album, it says, what's her name?
Julie Andrews.
No,
Audrey Hepburn.
Audrey Hepburn. Yeah. And it was this Margie Nixon or whatever her name is who did all the...
Yes, well that's what stopped Audrey Hepburn from getting an Oscar. I mean, everybody else got an Oscar for that film except her, because people, you know, you can't fool the public. You know, they know you're not singing and... And on top of that, they were all out in sympathy for Julie Andrews anyway, because she created the role. And this, I don't like about these film makers, because they will insist on having a box office name, and it's about making fortunes, because there's no big name demanding $1 million here and $1 million there, and 10% of the gross. And these are the people who are making money now, and the big people are losing it all, you know, because they will insist on having the names. Like, Man of La Mancha, anybody with a good voice who could act could do, because the show already had its name.
Right, yeah.
It was already made on Broadway.
Yeah.
But I thought they would have learned their lesson from My Fair Lady, you know. But no, they obviously haven't.
No, it's passé anyway, that system of
politics,
of needing a big name.
Yes, it's very passé. But it's politics.
Yeah. You know. Oh, by the way, there's one thing I wanted to ask you. Do you happen to speak any Spanish?
No. I'm sorry about that.
No, I just asked because I always look for an up whole thing, the signs of the zodiac.
Yes, I do, but I'm not fanatic about it. I have my astrology chart read about 5 years ago, and it was incredible, because not only did he tell me things that were going to happen to me, which have happened to me, but he told me things about when I was a child, which there was no possible way he could have known about. He couldn't have looked up any old press cuttings because there were things that, real things that I'd forgotten about that I'd never mentioned to the press. Like, for instance, when I was about 8 years old, he said, I have a scar somewhere, you know, that I received in a battle, and it is on my lip, you know. And that was a battle, I mean, but I didn't create it. I was innocent bystander.
Yeah.
Which was very strange for me, because I was normally in the midst of all those battles, you know. But I happened to go home for, I was a bit hungry, and I went home for a piece of bread or something. And when I came back, this battle was really going on. And I just turned the corner and wham!
Oh my God.
I got this brick in my face. And then he said, I had a traumatic experience when I was about 4 years old, which is true, because we left the area where I was born, Tiger Bay, which was mostly a Negro area, like Harlem, you know, in New York. And we went to live in an all-white neighborhood, which was quite a bit of a shock. Suddenly getting out the van with all the furniture and seeing all these white faces
staring, you know, at you,
staring at us like we were, you know, sort of monkeys in a zoo, you know. And then, of course, that was a traumatic experience at the time, but then, once that was over, I got on very well with everybody.
Yeah.
It was lovely, I loved it. You know, I was a novelty and I loved it.
Who doesn't want to be a novelty?
You know, and, you know, and I was invited everywhere. It was lovely. I didn't think it was a good job, I didn't. Otherwise, they probably might have left a scar.
Right.
And there was me thinking, oh, you know, cause they all love me. Well, they did end up loving me, you know. And they all had nicknames for me, like Toffee Apple and things like that.
But does that mean when you say that the women Capricorn have the possibility of choosing the right people around them, does that also mean, or could it mean, you're opportunistic?
I am what?
Opportunistic, an opportunist.
Oh, we were discussing this. Only foreigners use big words. Us English use all the simple words. Now,
somebody who takes advantage of the people around
him. Well, doesn't everybody, yes.
Do you think so?
Yes, of course. It's dog eat dog, it's the world, isn't it?
I don't think that you could really say everybody takes advantage of other people.
I think if you're honest about it, you admit it. I think everybody does, because it's a fight of survival.
Well, of course.
I don't mean this cruel. I don't mean that one, if one sees somebody, for instance, being accused of a crime that he has committed himself, I don't mean that he's going to let him get away with it. Eventually you're going to give himself up. No, but I mean, it's in a way of in life, I think it is. Everybody's terrified of their job, and they, of course, they'll do anything to keep it, because they have a family to support, you know. And of course, they take advantage, and they may not realize they're taking advantage of the other person. How come, you know, when you're successful, you have everybody's your friend, and the moment you need them, there's nobody around. So now tell
me. Nobody knows you when you're down and out.
Tell me, of course. Tell me then, the people don't take advantage of you. Because I've had enough people in my lifetime take advantage of me.
Well, yes, of course. In that respect, you're in a well, not a very general position. I mean, it doesn't go for everyday people, you know, that they really need their whatever it is, name or help or assistance or money, or, and they can't be taken advantage of so easily as someone like you. But now, what I really meant when you said we women Capricorn have the possibility of choosing the right people, it's something you do without...
We have the ability, not the possibility.
Oh, well, the ability.
The ability,
okay.
Yes.
But you don't do it consciously.
Consciously, I don't say, oh, good, yes. Then you're right for me, because, you know...
Well, that's what I mean.
No, it's a kind of, as we were talking about before, thing.
That you're sensible to
sensitive to that person, and it's like my musical director that I've had for 6 years. We have a fantastic relationship. My secretary that's been with me 2 years, you know, and the secretary before her, etc., you know, which... has been marvelous for me, because it's so necessary to have marvelous people around you, and especially people who are not neurotic or people who think that they are a star too, you know, in their own right. It's very important for somebody like me, you know.
So that would mean that you have a right eye for seeing somebody's values for what he or she is supposed to do at a certain moment.
Well, I don't know if I take the credit for this. I'm... Because being a Capricorn, I'm also a fatalist. You see, and...
Yeah, when you say the entire life, well, life is a fight and a survival,
yes.
A fight for survival,
fight
that
for
is
survival.
More or less fatalistic.
Mm-hmm. I think that my life is planned for me. I think it's all set out. I think it's set out for everybody. If I think it's for me, then I think I must Mm-mm. think it's for everybody.
Right.
And a lot of people obviously would disagree because you'd be surprised at the people who are not fatalistic because that is too much for them to expect. They don't want to believe that. Mm-hmm. They don't want to believe that their life is planned for them. You know,
no, because if
it spoils their dreams and their hopes. And,
right, because
you know,
once that you really... believe that to the full 100%, then that would, the consequence would be, well, no matter what I do, it'll happen the way it was planned anyway.
Well, wouldn't that save a lot of heartache, you know, and worry, you know, because...
That's not the way you live, is it?
No,
no
because
what I
have, because it hasn't destroyed my hopes
right,
and my dreams.
Right.
Uh-huh. Because if I'm a fatalist, then tomorrow could be a good day or a bad day
mm-hmm.
for me. It's still going to be a surprise or whatever,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean say I know about it.
No, of course not.
If I knew about it, then it would spoil my dreams and my hopes. But I don't know what tomorrow is going to bring like nobody else does.
Uh-uh.
But at the same time, what it does bring, whatever it does bring, it's meant to be.
Mm-hmm.
Because I never wanted to be a singer. And here I am, you know.
Yeah. It just
so
happened.
So many, you know, people say one of the world's top singers.
Yeah.
You know.
Which you are,
and,
as far as I'm concerned, too.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
But I never wanted to be a singer.
No.
It happened and just like that. I was always singing as a child, but I wanted to be a nurse one year, a secretary the next year, an air hostess the following year. My mother would say, make up your mind, and then I suddenly ended up in a factory because I didn't have any qualifications for any of these things that I wanted to do, you know. And so I ended up in a factory, which was something else that I didn't think of. And the singing would come out spontaneously and I couldn't control it. But my supervisor would always tell me to, for goodness sake, shut up, you know, and
really?
Get on with your job. And I was always being told to shut up, so I thought, well, even at school choir, I was singing louder than anybody else, and I was told to shut up.
This is your revenge, then.
So I suppose it's my revenge, my subconscious. But probably that's because one of the reasons why I never wanted to become a singer, because I was always told to shut up. Anyway, one day this man approached me and said, touring with a little group, you know, making a concert group, touring around the clubs of Wales, you know, of Cardiff, really, my hometown, you know. Would I care to join him? How much do I get, you know, because I could do with extra pocket money, you know. So he said, a couple of pounds, you know. So I said, okay, I'll do it. So Saturday and Sundays, I found myself in these clubs for singing.
Mm.
And one of these clubs, there happened to be a producer who said, I want that girl for my show that I'm putting
that.
On. And that was it. And I said, but I don't want to be a singer. I'm quite happy. I don't know. I'll speak to your mother. You're too young to decide. And, and so he spoke to my mother. And my mother said, yes, yes, as long as, you know, you give her a chaperone. Because she's... And so I found myself in a business that I didn't want.
Mm-hmm.
And I hated it. I really did. I hated the show I was in. I was surrounded by... people who seem to object to this young upstart being one of the principals, because I wasn't a dancer, I wasn't a chorus girl, I was a soubrette, as they said in those called us in those days, you know, which meant that I was the singer of the show, you
right.
know. And I didn't have to dance, and I didn't have to attend rehearsals every day like the chorus girls did, you know. And so there was this bad...
They did make
me share a dressing room with them, and
right.
that's what created terrible atmosphere, and they didn't like. And so I was very lonely. And then the second show was a little bit better, because there was one or two girls who kind of said, poor little thing, we'd take her under our wing, you know. And which they did, and then mm-hmm. it was all right. Anyway, I got a job as a waitress after that, you know. And I was beginning to be pretty good at it too, you know.
Yeah.
And then I had an SOS call from the choreographer in the first show that I was in, saying, would I help him out? He had a chance to take a troupe to Jersey, the Channel Islands.
Yeah.
But he badly needed a singer. So being as he was terribly kind to me, he and his wife, in fact, they were my chaperones, you know. In the first show, I said that I would go and help them out just for 10 days, you know. And I discovered when I got there that they wanted me to sing in front of the tabs while they were changing the scenery in the back.
Oh, no.
But still, it proved to be good for me, because sitting in the audience opening night was an Irishman called Michael Sullivan. Mm-hmm. And he said, my God, what a talent, what a voice, he said, actually, because I didn't know how to move, I was awkward, I just stood there like a dummy, but out came this voice, you know. So he said, with a little training, with a little help and a little guidance, you know, I could make her a big, big star, you know, which he started out to do. Here I am.
Well, yeah.
Without Michael Sullivan, though.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I left him somewhere along the way, you know. Mm-hmm. I outgrew him, I suppose, like an apprentice, you know. I suddenly needed a professor. He was my teacher, you know. And then I needed a professor, and I outgrew him, and I found myself professor.
You can't have one same teacher your entire life.
Or your entire life, exactly.
No.
You know, because I started to learn for myself after a while, you know.
Right.
And then we started to clash, because I started to think for myself. Mm-mm.
Capricorn.
Yes. You know, once
and
I
you wouldn't take no for an answer.
No answer. Exactly. And once I knew what it was all about, you know. Because before, you see, when I don't know what anything is, then I let myself be guided, which is Capricorn again, you know. Mm-hmm. Once they find out, they look out, you know.
And they know where to jump.
Exactly. It's like all those lies my mother told me about sex, you know. And I believed it till I found out for myself. And
he's the man with the Midas touch. A spider's touch. Such a cold finger beckons you to enter his web of sin. Kiss of death from Mr. Goldfinger. Pretty girl, beware of this heart of gold. This heart is cold. Golden words he will pour in your ear, but his lies can't disguise what you feel. Kiss of death from Mr. Goldfinger. Pretty girl, beware of this heart of gold. This heart is
Tom Meyer speaking to Shirley Bassey from 1975. One well-known name who appeared a number of times at Radio Netherlands as a special guest was Danny Kaye. He'd been interviewed a number of times by the late Bruce Parsons and Tom Meyer, who caught up with him at Schiphol Airport in Amsterdam.
People often say that it's the last minute that they can talk to someone. In this case, it's true. Mr. Kaye, thank you for waiting a couple of moments before leaving because you're on your way out.
Well, luckily we have our own plane here, you see, so we don't have to make an airline schedule.
That's
right.
We've
been jumping around all over Europe with the Jet Commander, which has been donated to UNICEF by the Israel Aircraft Industry.
Yes.
And I had the same plane in the States. I have one like it, you see.
That's what I heard. Yeah.
I made 30 cities in 3 days.
Wow. As they say in politics, no comment. That must be very tiring. And you fly yourself, don't you?
Yeah, I do. But it isn't tiring. It's kind of exciting and rewarding because... You probably know, Tom, I've been working with UNICEF for about 15 years, you know.
Uh-huh.
And we're trying to concentrate as much on the children now as on the adults because we find in the States when the kids go out on the Halloween, on the trick-or-treat program, and they begin to raise money for the program itself, they begin to understand that they are helping other children throughout the world. And it's a marvelous thing to happen because... last Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday when I went on this trip, and they go out on Thursday morning with their little boxes, every penny they collect, they understand is going to save a child's life, you see, in Biafra or you know, some other underprivileged countries. And the whole point is that if more people knew about the magnificent work that UNICEF is doing, and if more people began to understand the problems of the world's children, then maybe the world would understand itself a little better. And maybe we could leave a happier and healthier and more peaceful world to our children.
Yes. And are you trying to not only make the children see this, but also make the adults see this?
Oh, the adults first, of course. But if the children can begin to get a realization and a recognition of this at a very early age, they begin to understand that they are helping other children. When those kids grow up, maybe they'll be able to sit at a peace table and settle problems without having wars and things.
Yes, and remember what happened when they were small. Now, if you would have to define your work, and of course there is your artistic work and your work for UNICEF, what I won't ask what's the most important, but what comes first if you have to choose?
I don't know, really.
As a matter of love.
Well, I love both things. I love my own profession. I love working for UNICEF. So it's like having two children, you know.
Right.
You can't love one more than you do the other, you know.
But
when I have time, and I usually make time for this, I devote a number of months a year to UNICEF.
And did you get to want to do this one thing through the other? Did you
No. It all started when I was dealing with kids when I was a very young boy. And I was able to communicate with children. Then it started on a state level, then on a national level, and then it became an international level. And I really get a great sense of reward and a great sense of satisfaction from being able to do this kind of work. Because if I can help by working with UNICEF to leave a different kind of world for my daughter, I'm delighted to be able to do it.
Yes, and we would all. Well, let me wish you lots of luck with
this
work.
Thank you. Maybe I'll see you when I come back and we'll have a little more time together.
Yes, I'd love to.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Have a good flight.
Tom Meyer, who caught up with Danny Kaye at Schiphol Airport in Amsterdam just as Danny Kaye was about to leave. Anyway, we hope you enjoyed the second program of our anniversary specials for this year, which will be happening on the last Sunday of every month. The next one is going to be on March the 25th. What do we have scheduled then? Well, you'll just have to tune in. So, to leave today, we're going to end with the song Consider Yourself, recorded for Happy Station many years ago. So until next time, friends, I'm Keith Perron wishing you well, saying so long, au revoir, auf Wiedersehen, adios amigos. And sayonara.
Consider yourself at home. Consider yourself one of the family.
we've taken to you so strong. It's clear we're going to get along.
Consider yourself well in. Consider yourself part of the furniture. There isn't a lot to spare. Who cares whatever we got we share?
If it's your chance to be, we should see some harder days. Empty lot of days. Why grouse? Always a chance to meet somebody to foot the bill. Then the drinks are on the house.
Consider yourself our mate. We don't want to have no fuss.
For after some consideration we can state, consider yourself one of us. Consider yourself at home. Consider yourself one of the family. We've taken to you so strong. It's clear we're going to get along. Consider yourself
well in.
Consider yourself
part of the furniture.
There isn't a lot to spare.
Who cares?
What? Whatever we got, we share.
Nobody tries to be la di la da fancy. There's a cup of tea for all. Only it's wise to be handy with a rolling pin when the landlord comes to call.
Consider yourself our mate. We don't gonna have no fuss. For after some consideration, we can.